and approach. Again, that's Smoldering Fires, March 11th through April 10th at the Interstate Firehouse Cultural Center, 5340 Northeast Interstate Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland, and the time is just a few seconds before 11 o'clock. On KBOO, you hear about new and interesting authors nearly every day. Through the PAL's partner program, you can contribute to KBOO while shopping for the books you hear about over the air. We earn 7.5% on every dollar you spend at Powell's online. The same goes for books you sell to Powell's, which you can also do on their website. To use KBOO's partner program, go to kboo.fm/Powell's to look for books today. And now stay tuned for the KBOO Bike Show, bringing you news and views of cycling in Portland and beyond. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-7222. GROW, and by City Bikes, a worker-owned, cooperatively run, new and used bicycle sales and service shop with two locations on Southeast Ankeny near KBOO, open 7 days a week for your bicycle commuting needs and online at citybikes.coop.
You are tuned in to the KBOO Bike Show. We're broadcasting here live from the KBOO studios in Southeast Portland, Oregon. I'm Tori Bortman, and I'm here with my fellow co-host and newest addition to the Bike Show team, Megan Keys. Good morning, Megan.
Morning. I'm really glad to be here this morning.
I'm glad that you're here, too, because it is Megan's birthday. Happy birthday,
it
Megan.
It is. Thank you very much. Yeah. So on today's show, wait, Tori, do you hear that?
What is, oh man, it's a bike, isn't it? Yeah, that needs a little work.
A rusty chain. I know what that sound is. That's the sound of cycling in spring. 'Tis the season where all of our fair weather cyclists all over the world pull their bikes up from storage and dust them off to hit the roads for a fun tooling around town or a new morning commute, many of which might have a little need for a tune-up or some chain lube. As an all-weather cyclist myself, I find this time exhilarating to have more friends on the pavement with me, but find it also challenging to spread my years of carless wisdom on my morning commute. So I am thrilled to have some seasoned bicyclist advocates on the show today, spreading the news of upcoming program and policies that will help us all keep pedaling safe and sound around the city. Joining us on the first half of the show today is Steve Hoyt Macbeth, Bike Share Program Manager for Portland Bureau of Transportation, who will be filling us in on the upcoming launch of Biketown, Portland's first bike share program.
And in the second half of the hour, we'll be joined by Chris Smith. You might recognize that name, as Chris Smith has been kind enough to host the KBOO Bike Show podcast since our very inception as part of his nonprofit, Portland Transport. What you may not also know is that Chris Smith is the director of Portland Streetcar, a nonprofit that builds and operates this Portland Streetcar, and a commissioner on the Portland Planning and Sustainability Commission, which advises Portland City Council on its long-term goals. He'll be here to speak with us about the transportation system plan the City of Portland is updating for the very first time since 1980. Sounds like it's going to be wonky, but its effects will heavily shape how your city looks and how easily you're able to get around it from right now into the future. So if you've ever complained about worsening traffic problems in the city, this will be your chance to hear how we plan to solve them.
Great. Well, I would like to welcome to the show Steve Hoyt McBeth, who is the Bike Share Program Manager for the Portland Bureau of Transportation, to talk to us about the launch of Portland's very first bike share program, Bike Town.
Yay.
Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much, Megan, for having me.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. So I'm really excited. We actually have one in the studio.
Which we will be tweeting out some photos of for those of you who are interested.
Yeah, and I believe you just put one up on the
yes.
Bike Town mm-hmm. Twitter. And they're super shiny and nice. So for those of our listeners who are not familiar with a bike share program, could you give a little background on what it is?
Sure. So bike share is a system of public bikes available for short-term rental throughout the service area. So when you're in a bike share service area, you'll see bike share bikes at stations, on the street, on the sidewalk, in parks kind of around the city. And they're really a great choice for short trips. They're not something that you want to ride from here to St. John's. They're really meant for getting to a short work meeting or a commute within the 8 square mile service area.
Awesome.
Why is the service area only 8 square miles?
So that is one of the things that we've learned from other cities, and this is, I think, a big point. So, we're known as kind of on the cutting edge of biking. So this is one of the issues where Portland's actually taken a backseat to other cities and let other cities kind of like try things out and learn. And we've learned a lot from other cities. There's 65 U.S. cities operating bike share systems that goes from, the New Yorks, the Bostons, the Washington, D.C.s, to the Omahas, Columbus, Ohio, Houston, Texas. I mean, it's all over the place.
And we are pretty behind then.
Yeah, which is, there's some good things sometimes to not being the first out of the gate. And one of those things is we got to learn a lot from what worked and what hasn't worked in other cities. And one of the big things is that we've learned that bike share works a lot like transit, and you need to have your stations close together so that when you're in the bike share service area, you're always near and convenient to a bike share station. So what we've found from some of cities like us that have wanted to kind of have stations all over the entire city without having the investment to do that is that they spread the stations very far apart. And that makes, if you happen to live right next to that station or work right next to that station, it's convenient for you, but it actually degrades the service for the entire city because it's depending on where you are, there's not necessarily a bike share system. So we tried to be very disciplined, especially since the our city council has told us very clearly that there will not be public money in the operation of the system.
Which is amazing. We can talk more about that later.
We could. That we want to have the stations close together because we know from other cities that your service and your performance of that system is the best when those stations are close together. So that's led us to have a fairly compact service area that includes all of the central city and most of our close-in east side kind of main streets, the Alberta Interstate, Mississippi, North Williams.
Oh, so like our neighborhoods.
Where
we have kind of our Portland boroughs.
Yeah, I think that where most people kind of think of as the heart of the city.
Yeah, and so I'm a recent transplant to Portland in the last less than 2 years, and I've lived in major cities where I got to take advantage. So I lived in Chicago, got to experience Divvy Bike, lived in New York, got to experience City Bike, and have, I do love it. It's a great thing to have. But how different is it really going to be than other cities? Because I know we'd have to corral at specific places in the cities that I've used it before. Will we have the same similar system here?
What do you mean corral?
Like there was a station where you literally would like push your bike in and then it locks, and that's how
that's how the bike was locked up.
That was how the bike would lock up. Okay.
Yeah. Thanks, Megan. That's a really good question. So As I mentioned before, there's some things that are good for waiting. And one of the things is we were able to leapfrog over a whole generation of technology with bike share. So the systems that you experience, which are fantastic systems in Chicago and New York City, have what are either called a station-based system or a smart dock system. So to use a bike share bike or park the bike, you always have to go to a station.
Similar to like a subway station.
Yeah, except, like, yes, and the bikes and the technology are such that you can't lock that bike anywhere but that bike share station. So if you're, there's some good about that. There's a really high, you always know where, it's kind of like a bus stop, you know where to go. There's also some challenges to that. And one of the things is when that bike share station in these other cities that have a smart dock system, when that station is full, if you come to that station to bring a bike to it, you can't park that bike there. You have to then ride and find another station that will likely be 2, 3, or 4 blocks away. So that's kind of an inconvenience for the consumer, and it's also a huge cost for the operator.
And I want to back up just one second because I'm not sure that you mentioned something. You can't use the bikes as long as you want to, correct? You can't just like be out for 4 hours with the bike.
Depending on, you could certainly do that. There's just different charges for different types of,
but how are they meant kind of to be?
Yeah, so I think thank you, Tori. So bike share trips tend to be short trips. The bike share is really designed for that short trip of under 30 minutes. And if you look at the average thing, about a mile. I mean, if you're looking for a bike that you want that you want to ride all over the city, let's say a bike share bike is not the greatest trip if you want to take a 3-hour bike ride. It's a heavy bike. It's going to be, it's built for what it does.
The reason I bring that up is because that's why it's important that you have stations to dock the bike back in, because you're going to get charged for the next half hour or whatever, however it works with this system, if you don't return it.
Yes, you're certainly charged for the use of the bike. It's a rental bike system. Back to your question, Megan, about so what happens. So as I mentioned before, if you're in a city with a smart dock system, and you come to a full station, then that station's full. You can't just leave the bike next to the station and walk away, because that bike's unlocked and somebody could grab it and steal it. So you have to then ride to another station. So that's it's a big cost for the operator, because they have to actually take vans and fill put at a full station, take some of those bikes out and take it to an empty station. It's also an inconvenience for the consumer, and it's also has a real carbon footprint to it. We see in other cities about half of the carbon savings from people switching from driving to using bike share bikes, which is very substantial among members, gobbled up by some of this rebalancing of the system with fans. So we're going to have a smart bike system, and the smart bike system means that all the technology for locking your bike and checking out a bike actually sits on the bike itself as opposed to in the station. So if you came to, and we're still going to encourage you to park a bike at a bike share station, and the reason for that is to try to like provide as much reliability of that use as we can, so you could have that kind of like bus stop sort of mentality where you just walk out, if I get in front of my bus stop or the bus stop near work or cafe, the bus is going to come. So we want people to have that reliability. But if you came to a station that was full with our Bike Town system, which will open in July, and that's full, you'll just, since the locking mechanism is right on the bike, you can just use one of our more than 4,000 bike racks that is throughout the service area and just park the bike there.
And those are the City Blue.
Most of those are the City Blue.
The ones we're already using for our own personal bikes.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yeah. So you could use that though. But I guess I want to make sure that I'm clear on something so people don't know. There'll be no charge to that experience if the rack's full or we've marked them stuff. If you decide that the station is 3 blocks from where you want to go and you're late for a meeting and you decide you want to park your bike just right in front of where you are as opposed to at a station, there'll be an additional fee for that ability. But the good thing is we can use our customers to kind of help us rebalance the system. So as opposed to sending a van out to rebalance that bike that's kind of not at the station, if Megan parks the bike there, and we charge her a little bit extra for that convenience. And then Tori comes out of the cafe that Megan just goes into, and she grabs that bike, and then she rides it back to a bike share station. We'll take a little bit of the fee that we charge Megan and give it to Tori. So we've just eliminated a van trip. We've just reduced the carbon emissions of the operation of the system. And we make, hopefully, Megan feels good for the convenience that she got, and Tori feels better
So is the only way I'm going to be able to find that bike is if I stumble upon it? Or is there going to be a way to use a smartphone app or something to find them?
Great question, Tori.
Well, I've used the bike share in Paris, and I've used the bike share in Madison. And when there's a docking station, you can look and see how many bikes are in the docking station and where they are. And
thanks very much for that question. So all of our smart bikes have GPS on the back of them, so you know at all times where all the bikes are. And as a consumer, you'll be able to look on the smartphone app or on the web and actually see where the stations are, how many bikes are at the stations, and also see if there are any of these bikes that are kind of these errant bikes, like in our scenario before where Megan goes to the cafe.
I feel like they're like sheep that are just wandering off without their shepherd.
Can you reserve in advance? Is this like car-to-go almost?
You will have that. We're still working out. There's certainly the technology to allow you to do that, and we're still trying to figure out if we're going to do that and if there's going to be an additional fee for that convenience. But there's certainly that capability to do so that you could, if you were on the max and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm about to come to Pioneer Courthouse Square and I know that station's going to be slammed when I get off, and you could reserve the bike a little bit ahead of time.
But maybe so in that case, it sounds like there might be like a time limit on how much you can reserve it ahead of time.
I think that not to get too much into the weeds, but I think one of the challenges that we're trying to figure out is trying to balance convenience with fairness and reliability. So if I'm walking up to a station
and all the bikes are reserved,
Because everybody on Megan's max train or whatever the scenario is, sorry to keep on picking on Megan.
I'm just advertising bike time on the train all the time, guys.
So that if that happens, you know, we're just trying to balance that convenience with fairness and we'll reach a happy medium with those two things. I think the great thing is that we have a technology that allows us a little bit more experimentation. And I think Portlanders like to kind of push the envelope and do things in innovative ways. And so I think we have lots of opportunities to do that. Yeah.
If you are just tuning in to the bike show today, we're here with Steve Hoyt McBeth, who's joined us to talk all about the wonders that will be Portland's very first bike share program, Bike Town.
Yeah, and we were just talking, you just mentioned a little on the technology of the bike, and so I'm kind of looking at this really awesome, shiny orange bike, which I love the color orange. I am so glad.
For those Oregonians who know, it's kind of a Beaver's Oregon State orange.
Yeah,
that's what I would say. Not exactly, maybe.
Commissioner Novick, Chief of Staff, is squirming right now if he's listening because he's a huge Duck fan.
Well, honestly, I prefer the orange to the green of the Ducks, but okay.
There's yellow, too. The bike lock is yellow.
So there you go. Yeah, the bike lock, the way the bikes are going to be safe is all for the Oregon Ducks. Yeah.
Can you fill us in a little bit more about like the perks and the glitz of our awesome bike town bikes?
Sure. Thanks, Megan. So as I mentioned, we're I think lucky in Portland that waiting has allowed us to go with the latest technology, with the smart bike technology. All of the bikes, when you ride a bike, once you check it out, the front and rear light are always on, so you're kind of in a really safe position. And I'll take this second to make a plug that bike share bikes actually have a better safety record than private bike usage.
Ooh.
The Mineta Transportation Institute, with some UC Berkeley researchers, just published that study. And we actually, besides that, we're actually going to be the first, I'm staring over here at the bike, I think we all are, we'll be the first city in, I know in the on the continent, I think on the world, to have reflectivity actually built into the bike. So when you see the bike share bike, our Bike Town bike, there's these gray and darker gray stripes across of it. And that's kind of a retro reflective area. So when a car headlight hits that, it really brightens up. So you'll have this additional sort of visibility beyond the radiant orange of the bike and the fact that it's kind of an upright bike as well.
So speaking of safety, are helmets required?
Helmets are not required. So state law says that anybody over 16 does not have to wear a helmet. We're really lucky in Portland that we really have a culture of helmet wearing. We have over 80% of adults in our annual bike counts wearing helmets, and that actually number continues to grow, which is a wonderful wonderful thing. So you will not be, similar to state law, you won't be required to wear a helmet, but we will have options for people, both when you become a member on discounts on getting a helmet, and also partnerships that we're working on right now with some of the bike rental shops to like be able to go into bike rental places and actually get a helmet there.
And just like rent a helmet from somebody who's renting bikes. Cool.
Yeah.
So other perks that I've noticed that we didn't have in my previous cities, there's a giant basket on this bike, which is really lovely for anyone who has back problems.
Yes, thanks a lot. You should be touting this bike as opposed to I.
That's funny, yeah, because in Paris and in Madison, they both had baskets in the front.
I think that none of the bikes share. Am I correct by saying this?
So they have different types of carrying devices on the front of the bike. So I think that there's some of the bikes have this area that's kind of like an open U on the front. A lot of the systems, like both the DC
and
City Bike and the Divvy system in Chicago, all have that. And so that.
That's not a real basket, though.
No.
Yeah, it's just kind of, if you had something very
I think the Parisians
large.
Were like, we are not getting these bikes without a basket on the front. Yeah. Like, they were just, they were like, no, we want a big, fat basket to put our baguette and our wine in. They were,
And I think in New York, they, like, discouraged it because they didn't want to, like, have people put their children in the basket, but instead they just had them put. Like, there's pictures all over the internet of, like, kids in between the handlebars on the city bikes.
Yeah, great. Safety first.
Good old New Yorkers. I mean, I think that one of the neat things, I won't name the suppliers, but there are some bike share manufacturers that do have baskets on them where the weight of that basket kind of makes it a little bit tricky to maneuver, especially when you turn. Mm-hmm. And so we were really excited about just the way our bike, which is manufactured by Social Bicycles, the way that it actually feels, it actually rides and feels like riding a regular bike, and that they've done a nice job of incorporating a basket that has a decent amount of carrying capacity. I mean, you're not going to move your house on the bike, but it works nicely, and it actually feels nice when you're riding as well.
How, though, is it going to fit myself, who's 5'5", mm-hmm. or you, Steve Hoyt-McBeth, who's much taller than I?
Yeah, thank you for the question. So there is, similar to other bike share bikes, there's an adjustable seat, so you can kind of bring the seat up and down so that it can kind of be ridden by people of a lot of different heights. And I think that's part of the reason that we have kind of like an upright bike. So it's kind of like a city bike or a cruiser bike sort of feel to it. And that seems to accommodate a lot of different people as well.
That's great. Yeah, the ones I've worked on, it's like they are ridden on the, when you raise the seat also is on an angle. So it moves backwards as it comes up so that it gets longer for people who have longer
as
knees.
As someone with like a mechanical mind, you would notice these things in me as like an English major.
If your knees are hitting the handlebars, Steve, you're going to have a hard time steering that.
That would not be a comfortable experience.
No.
So we talked. You were talking about cost earlier. So what is the cost to a renter?
So we have yet to finalize our pricing plan. We should be coming out with that in the coming months, certainly before before memberships go on sale, which will happen in June. But one of the things that we're very proud of is that we made a real attempt with our pricing to make sure that the pricing was as affordable as it could be to most folks. And that it also was a pricing mechanism that really favored people switching to biking for trips that they're doing by other means that are involve an automobile right now. So if I could jump down into the weeds for a second. So most, if you were in New York City or Chicago, mm-hmm. like Megan, where you've ridden bike share, and you just want to try bike share out, just maybe you're a resident, you just want to give it a spin. So the lowest cost to do that would be around $7 or $10 to do that, depending on those two cities. Now, if you're someone who's visiting one of those cities.
Like I was in Paris?
Yeah, then you're like, that's a great deal. I mean, that's a really wonderful kind of authentic experience to have in that city. But if you're somebody who is not somebody who's biking right now or just doesn't tend to bike, and maybe you just missed your bus and you've worked late, and so you know your next bus isn't going to be for 30 minutes, and you're like, ay, ay, ay. And there's a bike share bike across the street. Probably if that's $7 or $10, you're going to say, well, why don't I just, either I'm going to wait it out because I'm kind of cheap, or I'm going to, you know, get a cab, or I'm going to look at Uber or Lyft or whatever. So we wanted to make sure that for those kind of trips, for a resident who wants to get around, that our pricing made sense for that kind of trip. Because our goal, we're the transportation bureau. We're all about trying to move people into more sustainable and efficient ways of getting around. We wanted the pricing to reflect that. So our pricing for a 30-minute trip will be $2.50.
Oh, wow. So that's great. That's very similar to Paris.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
my week-long pass in Paris was about, I don't know, €8. So not yeah. that much. And when I was in Madison, it was like almost $6 if I wanted to use it for the whole day.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that doesn't feel as good somehow. Yeah.
And now
so that's wonderful.
That's yeah. really fantastic. And then, so just a quick note, mm-hmm. like, we've talked about being the progressive bike city.
Yes.
Everybody has at least one bike.
Yeah.
Most people.
whether or not it's running, but they have one.
Exactly.
That's where Tori comes in.
I'm sure you've gotten this question more times than yeah. not. Why, if I've got three bikes, why would I want to use a bike share?
Right. So I'll say a couple of things. So if you're that person with 3, 4, 5 bikes, or just maybe one bike that you ride 365 days a year, you know, for every trip that's not below 20 degrees, bike share as in terms of a direct transportation choice may not help you. However, if you're that person, you want to see a better biking environment in Portland, you want to see more people on bikes, you want to see the city make more investments and do projects that really reflect what you would like to see in terms of a transportation network, then it's actually going to help you quite a bit, because the whole goal of bike share is to bring new people onto bikes and get people who are biking some to bike more. And what we're essentially doing in that is we're growing the constituency for bicycling and to make us be able to do better projects and to invest more in active transportation.
Well, and I can see definitely that a lot of my students, as you mentioned, I teach bike repair. They come in and they say, I didn't know how to do this before. And so if I got a flat or if I got something more major wrong with my bike, I was done for the day. Mm-hmm. Like my bike was gone. I had to bring it into the
yeah.
shop.
Yeah.
But this way, if they bring it into the shop, their bike needs a little more work. They need to get back to work. They can take
yes.
the bike share
yeah.
and then go back later and pick
right.
it up. So
yeah.
it's kind of expanding our tool chest for getting around
Absolutely.
Portland.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
Yeah.
And then
and I would,
can no, you please. Describe really quickly, because I don't think we've said it yet, of like, here's Tori. I want to use my bike share and I've got my credit card and it's my one day that I'm visiting Portland.
Yeah.
How does it actually work?
Sure.
Like physically, how do
physically,
I go?
Yeah. So you'll have a number of different options. So if you're someone who's more kind of like an online sort of person, which is kind of more and more where we see people going, both high income, middle income, and low income folks, then you could either go onto the web and sign up for a membership right there, and then you'll have a number. You could download the smartphone app that's free and kind of like and reserve it through that. So this is just for you're again speaking for the visitor here,
yes.
not about residents. Because if you're a resident, we hope that
we
you'll
have a lot
a,
of people coming
yes,
to Portland.
Yes, we certainly do.
Tourism. So.
Yeah, and then we'll also have at our kind of high walk up, what we call high walk up activity stations, where we're anticipating seeing a lot of visitors. Where we have like these kind of major destinations, the Powell's, the Pioneer Courthouse Squares. We'll have credit card kiosks where you could actually just walk up to the credit card kiosk and plunk in your credit card and just and go ahead and reserve the bike that way.
And then. The bike's just there? Like, how is it locked? I'm a little bit confused
yeah,
about
sure.
the lock part.
Thank you.
Because if it's not docked into a station, which
right.
it locks into,
yeah.
how is it not being just ridden away?
Yeah, thank you very much. So the bike share stations themselves have racks as part of them that are very branded in a very distinct manner, so they don't look like our regular bike racks. So that's where the bikes will be locked, and then you would walk up. If you're a member, you'll have a card that you can just kind of tap. It'll be similar to the new TriMet that we'll have next year, the hop sort of thing. You can just tap it on the back and put in your PIN, and then unlock the bike yourself.
So I literally tap the card on the bike.
There's a PIN pad, yes, on the back of the bike
oh,
that you can actually just set it there, and it reads it, and then you just put in your card, or you can just manually enter your card number on the PIN pad that's on the back of the bike.
So instead of a kiosk, like when I go Smart Park and I have to go
yes.
do it all at a kiosk.
Yes.
I do it all
You're
on
right
the
on the bike.
Bike.
Yeah, all the technology is on the bicycle, and that's what allows
us. To go back
us.
To that earlier
yes.
example of Meg left the bike outside the coffee
yes.
shop, and now here I am,
yes.
lucky me, I happen upon it.
Yes.
I can just literally use my little card on the bike.
Absolutely.
Or
you could do that on your smartphone, or you could just, if you knew your member number, you could just
tap
it.
We're so high tech.
We're so high tech. Yes. So you'll be, and then you would actually, you manually pull the lock out of the bike itself and put it in the holster, which is right on the side of the bike. And then right off. And so again, so then you have that option, because the the rack itself is just metal. There's no technology in the rack itself. It's just branding to try to make it look distinct. And if maybe I should email some photos to Megan or Tori if you want to post
We'd love
up on
to put
that.
Those on our face for sure.
Yes. So the but then you still have that opportunity to park at any of our public bike racks throughout the area, and we have literally 4,000 of them within the service area.
Oh, this is wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Steve Hoyt Macbeth, for all of the information. I know I can speak for myself that I'm really excited and looking forward to the bike launch somewhere around July, right?
July, yes.
Yeah.
July-ish? Do we not have a firm date yet?
We are. We will be in the month of July.
Okay.
I am hoping for the middle of July.
Okay.
But we've
so we'll, definitely by August 1st.
Absolutely by August 1st.
Okay, there we go.
I will be knocking on KBOO's door to see if they need anybody to sweep up around the office.
We can pay in baked goods.
Yeah.
And so then where can our listeners get more information and possibly sign up early?
Yeah, thanks so much. So what we didn't talk about, I would like people to go to pdxbikeshare.com. And we are right in the middle of our public involvement process. So we are actually trying to narrow our 300 station candidates down to the 100 final stations.
Which means you, dear listener, can influence where those stations are going to be.
Absolutely. Thank you, Tori. So we've had, I just looked, over 4,300 online comments already. So people are very passionate about biking and bike share. And we've had really positive comments. But please help us out and tell us which ones are our best station locations.
Great. And we'll post that information this afternoon as well on our site. So thank you very much, Steve.
We're having a great conversation so far on KBOO. We're going to take a quick break before we're joined by Chris Smith, our podcast host, but today our advisor on how Portland plans to keep our growing traffic problem from getting completely out of control. Stick around. Welcome back to the KBOO Bike Show here on 90.7 FM. I'd like to now welcome Chris Smith. You may recognize that name as he has been kind enough over the years to host the KBOO Bike Show podcast pretty much since the beginning of our show as part of his nonprofit, Portland Transport. But what you may not know is that Chris Smith is also a dedicated director of the Portland Streetcar, a nonprofit that builds and operates Portland Streetcar, and he's a commissioner on the Portland Planning and Sustainability Commission, which advises the Portland City Council on its long-term goals. Today, we'll be discussing the Portland Transportation System Plan, as well as the Comprehensive Plan and a couple other plans, all which come together for the City of Portland to update for the first time since 1980. It's going to very heavily affect how our transportation is shaped in the city and how easily you'll be able to get around the city. So if you've ever complained about worsening traffic problems, or this is your chance to hear how the city plans to solve them. Welcome, Chris Smith.
Well, thank you, Tori. Thank you, Megan. I'm delighted to be here. And there are actually three plans I'd like to talk about. The first is the Comprehensive Plan, which is the city's fundamental planning document. And that's the piece we have not completely rewritten since 1980. We've done updates along the way, but this is the first start from scratch, rewrite the whole thing in a generation.
So what is a Comprehensive Plan?
So the Comprehensive Plan is the fundamental planning document for the city. It covers everything from water and sewer lines to the zoning to policies about transportation.
So zoning for how new condos are going to get built.
Exactly.
Okay, so that's really
important for housing, really important for transportation, covers a range of issues. a sort of subcomponent of that is the transportation system plan, which is sort of getting more detailed and more specific about how the transportation system works. And we do update that every 5 or 6 years because we have to stay in sync with the regional transportation
plan. I was going to say 1980 seemed like a long time.
Yeah, we've updated the transportation system plan considerably sooner than that. And then finally, there's the central city plan, which if you could just imagine, we took a cookie cutter and cut a donut hole in the middle of the city and said, we're going to take everything from Southeast 12th Avenue to the east to just past Lincoln High School to the west and from South Waterfront to Lloyd District. And we're going to go look at that in more detail by itself because it's the most complicated part of the city. So
one of the most dense.
Yes.
Right.
So we want to be extra careful there. So we're doing that in a separate process that lags the others by a little bit. So when we talk about the comp plan of TSP, just think about this hole in the middle that we're not quite talking about yet.
Can I ask, is the central city plan, is that a new thing or is that how has been in?
We've actually done several versions before. We had the 1970s downtown plan, and then we had a 1980s central city plan, and then this again is the newest update to that. So the fact that we have a transit mall downtown is a reflection of the earlier plans. So some important ideas have come out of those plans. So I suggest we think about those plans as having three pieces: policies, maps, and project lists. So if I could take the comp plan as an example, some really important policies for transportation and biking. First is modal preference. So, we know in this country, the automobile has reigned supreme for 100 years.
That has been the mode of preference for a long time.
So in this comp plan, which is in front of City Council right now, we have what we call the transportation strategy. And it says the number one priority is walking. The number two priority is cycling. Number three is transit. Number four is shared mobility. So taxis, Ubers, Lyfts, carpools.
Bike town?
Well, that would be under cycling.
That would be under cycling.
That would be under cycling. Number five is zero emission vehicles. So if you've got your your new Tesla, you're in that category.
Ooh, I want a Tesla.
Then at the very bottom, the very, very bottom is your old carbon consuming single occupancy vehicle. So we have flipped the traditional hierarchy on its head.
How did that happen? How did that conclusion come to is the future of what we want to see in Portland? Why?
So we've been working up to that in a number of other plans. So it's been part of our climate action plan for several iterations. We put that idea in the bicycle master plan in 2010, and we'll talk about how that ties into all of this. We put it in the Portland plan, which was kind of the strategic planning document that feeds the comp plan, which is the make
it's
it actual
our
law.
Little hierarchy of
That's
plans.
Right. We love hierarchies of plans. We're the city that plans.
So, but why did you flip it? I mean, was it what was driving that? What did you see that said we need to change something?
Well, I think we can look both at the health of the planet and the health of the city and say neither one of those is going to thrive if we keep cars at the top of the hierarchy.
Okay.
Right? We know that globally, global warming is the biggest threat to human civilization there probably is, right? At the city level, you hinted at the issues of traffic congestion that we have, right?
Oh, yeah.
If we keep growing the city at the existing mode shares that we have, the percentage of people that drive, the percent that bike, the percent that walk, we will just run out of space. And I think, we've seen it in the last couple of years. The streets in Portland have gotten a lot less friendly as there's been
Absolutely.
More congestion, more road rage.
And just more
deaths,
people. There's
right?
just more people who are on the roads.
So the trick to that is that, the city will keep growing. We want to keep growing in population, economically. We want it to thrive. But we have to move through the city differently to do that. So basically, there's a race going on between that growth and how fast we can shift people to other modes, get them out of their cars and onto, get the ones who, the policy says, for trips within a mile, we'd like people to walk. For trips up to 3 miles, we'd like cycling to be the preferred mode. And for longer trips, we want transit to be the preferred mode. So,
well, and as a cyclist,
mm-hmm.
I sometimes forget about walking and then I walk and I'm like, oh, wow, this is nice. It's so funny because I'm just so used to getting there a little bit faster by bike that I don't.
Right. So they all have to fit together. And one of the things the transportation system plan says as a goal is that in 2035, which is the horizon year for the plan, we want to have 25%.
What does a horizon year mean?
That's the
finish?
The end of the period we're looking at.
So, okay, great.
We're claiming to be able to predict what's going to happen for 20 years. Our crystal ball doesn't go out to 30 years, right?
Yeah.
20 years at a time is kind of enough.
So it's kind of like the 2035 would be like the end of the plan is accomplished by then.
Right. So we're looking at all the things that will happen between now and then. So 2035, we'd like 25% of people to be using bikes to get around and 25% to be using transit. So those would be the two dominant modes, and then the other 50% would be split among the other things.
Where does walking...
I don't remember the percentage walking off the top of my head, but you know it's limited those trips of a mile or so, right?
Okay.
So it's always going to be a relatively smaller share than biking because you know, the two modes for sort of the long range would be biking and transit, right? So biking up to 3 miles, transit further. So those will be the big parts of the pie.
So since I've moved here, I've heard the word the 20-minute neighborhood thrown mm-hmm. around a lot. Mm-hmm. What part of the plan was that in the past, or is that in the future?
And what is a 20-minute neighborhood?
Yeah.
So that's a central concept in the comp plan. And we renamed it Healthy Connected City because that sounds a little better than 20-minute neighborhood. Not everybody understood 20-minute neighborhood. But the idea is that you should be able to get to most of the things you need in your daily life within a 20-minute walk of where you live. So it's about getting people to live in relatively concentrated centers. So in the comp plan, we talk about centers and corridors. So, you know, a center is Hollywood, for example.
Okay.
You know, if you live in Hollywood, there are lots of things you can walk to. You can get to the grocery store, you get to restaurants, you can get to the schools,
you can get to the
library.
Doctor. Yeah.
All those things, just walk. So we're promoting having more of those centers in Portland, spread all through the city. And then the corridors that connect them, which are also places where people will live and have easy connections to things. So you know, we used to call it nodes and noodles, but now we call it centers and corridors. It sounds better.
Well, can you give me an example of a current corridor that leads to a center?
Sure. So Belmont, right?
Okay.
So, you know, Belmont goes from the central city, which is the biggest center in the whole region.
Okay.
And we're now defining a new neighborhood center that's sort of in that cluster between Belmont and Hawthorne. So we're saying, well, it's going to be a lot of growth there. There are going to be more things you can get to there. And Belmont is one of the corridors that connects those.
Okay. Right. And then there'll be a concentration. So it's kind of, I mentioned it earlier talking about bike share, but we never call it that in Portland, but it's almost like the boroughs of New York City, where we're going to have these small mm-hmm. We have names of them. If you live here, you know what they are, but so it'll be based around the neighborhood. Right. And then what is the city looking towards? You said 25% bikes and 25% transit. Mm-hmm. What kind of transit will that look like? Is that going to be bus or streetcar, or what's it looking like?
So it will probably be all the above. So we have, you know, sort of multiple levels of transit within the city. There is the regional high capacity transit network that is mostly light rail now, although now we're talking about bus rapid transit out to Gresham via, you know, Powell and Division. So we're looking at other modes besides strictly light rail, although I saw that Metro just recommended that the connection to the Southwest down to Bridgeport Village should be light rail. So that'll be an interesting discussion as they finalize that. So we'll see those big capital investments, you know, the thing that costs $1 billion or more for a line.
Right.
We'll see, I hope, lots of increases in just, you know, everyday bus service on the frequent transit lines, because those, you know, that is still, you know, perhaps the largest piece of how people get around on transit. Yeah, I think we will see some streetcar lines. We're having an active debate about where those fit in the transportation system plan right now, what corridors will come next. But, you know, a place like Sandy or MLK could be an excellent place for streetcar. And streetcar is actually, as much as it's a mobility tool, it is a tool to create those 20-minute neighborhoods. Because what we've learned is when you put a streetcar line down, people will build tall buildings next to it if you zone for it. So with the combination of zoning and planning streetcar, we get some of those very, very dense neighborhoods like the Pearl District and South Waterfront, which, you know, again, you have all those things there. You can walk to everything you need. You don't need to get in your car, right? So streetcar is a tool to help us form that, as well as a way to move on the corridors that connect them.
So I'm wondering, too, we've talked a lot about inner Portland. Mm-hmm. Can you speak towards anything that's happening out further, where everyone seems to be having to move?
Sure. Well, affordability is a huge issue. And, you know, we are trying to, in the comp plan, we have a policy that says that 30% of all the housing built in Central City should be affordable to people at, I think, 60% of median family income or lower. So we're trying to make sure there's affordable housing everywhere, but that is a big, big challenge.
Is Central City, by the way, is it defined by streets at all, or is it regional? What is that?
There's a map. So again, it's, you know, about Southeast 12th over to just past Lincoln High School, and then South Waterfront up to Lloyd District. You know, one way to think about it is just everything inside the streetcar loop is more or less the Central City. So East Portland has been a huge priority in this plan, and it's really about bringing more infrastructure to East Portland because it's been deficient in infrastructure, and helping create those 20-minute neighborhoods. So a place like what we call Division Midway, which is Division and about 160th, I think, trying to grow a town center there so you have one of those neighborhoods where you can get to everything. And in another part of the plan, which is the project list, which we've prioritized 20 years of transportation projects, we've put a lot of focus on transportation projects in East Portland, whether that's bikeways or sidewalks or safety projects. We actually sort of had some sorting criteria that gave double points for things in East Portland, to some degree in Southwest Portland, where there's also deficits in infrastructure.
Yeah, so basically lack of sidewalks. If the further east you go,
all absolutely.
And then I'm just curious, within the plans, is there any addition towards new bike lanes that would be? Oh my gosh, I'm blanking on the word.
Bike lanes,
protected bikeways.
Protected. Thank you.
No car. No, the thing.
Well, so that's actually an interesting part of it that my commission is actually in the middle of right now. So one of the things we're doing with the transportation system plan part of this update is we are incorporating the bicycle master plan from 2010. So we passed the plan 2010. It's not actually hasn't been part of the transportation system plan yet.
Which is so silly, we're just finally but there you go.
Adopting it in, and that means looking at the bikeway classifications again, because hopefully we've learned a few things in the 6 years in between. And one of the big innovations from the Bicycle Master Plan was having two categories of bikeway. So we had your sort of everyday city bikeway, and then we added a classification we're calling a major city bikeway. So it's like the bicycle highways, right?
Like, and Vancouver or Williams, would that be?
That would be a major city bikeway.
Okay, right. Like going, like the neighborhood greenways?
Well, going
is
a fascinating question, because in 2010, we drew a line for a major city bikeway through that part of the city, and we put it on Mason. But hey, look, we've developed this world-class facility ongoing, right? So one of the questions I asked is, should we move that dark green line from Mason over to Going? And
since it's already there?
Yeah.
We're having an active discussion about that. So that's where we learn things. And another question is that in the comp plan, we defined what we're calling civic corridors, which are the streets in Portland that are going to be the most active, the most intense land use places, like Sandy, for example.
Okay.
Major redevelopment opportunity.
Well, and I rode my bike down Sandy to get here because it's my quickest way here today. So,
and in the 2010 plan, we said, yeah, Sandy should be a bikeway. But we didn't say it should be a major city bikeway. And, since Sandy is a diagonal where there's no good parallel route, shouldn't that be the bicycle highway in that part of town? So we're looking at the question, should we, particularly Sandy and Foster, since they're the two diagonals, should we make those major city bikeways? So that's an active discussion we're having. We'll probably vote on next Tuesday at the Planning and Sustainability Commission. So those are the kind of issues we're getting into.
So we've lived in a fairly blissful and traffic-free Portland until about the last 5 years, and it's really increased since then. And we also mentioned earlier the huge effect on affordable housing in Portland. And as along with that affordable housing and more housing coming in is parking.
Yes.
And parking, we can talk about parking for cars, we can talk about parking for bikes, we can talk about parking for cars, protected bikeways.
Right.
How is the transportation system plan or the comprehensive plan taking all that into account?
So I would say that parking is in some ways the linchpin, because it has both impacts and major roles facilitating things. And parking is a huge part of the equation in housing affordability.
Absolutely.
Because if when we say you're building an apartment and you have to build a parking space with it, we just added $20,000 to the cost of that apartment, and therefore several hundred dollars a month to the rent. And we know that basically the availability of parking is an inducement to get people to drive. So the comp plan policies talk about limiting parking. They don't say, we're going to not do any more parking, but we're being very conscious to limit it and make sure that we're doing parking in a way that facilitates the kind of mode shift we want to have happen. So, for example, one of the things you could do is if you're building an apartment building, we may require that you have some parking, but we would also say, hey, if you put in a bike share station on your land as part of building that apartment building, you can maybe build four less parking spaces.
Oh, so you're kind of adding that incentive
right
in there. That's amazing. I mean, if I, Yeah. That makes a condo a lot more. Is there any code going into buildings to make sure that if it is a car diet building, that there's places that are safe and secure for bicycle parking, since that's 25% of the mode? Because that's a huge problem if you can't park your bike.
So bicycle parking has been a challenge. Until about 7 years ago, our bike parking code said you had to have one bike parking space for every four apartments, which we know is hugely inadequate, right? That was written in the 1990s when our bicycle mode share goal, we could imagine if the world were perfect, we'd have 10%, right? Now we're shooting for 25, so we need to up our game. And a few years ago, we did change that. In Central City, you now have to build 1.5 bike parking spaces for every apartment. But look at what's happened in the buildings that have been built since then. What have the developers done? They put them all in vertical wall racks because that's the tightest they can space the bike parking. Well, not everybody can lift a bike onto a vertical wall rack.
And not everybody's bike fits on a
What do we do with the box feet and the cargo bikes? So we actually have yet another project that just started that I'm really excited about because I've been trying to get it going for a couple of years, is we are going to overhaul the city bike parking zoning code from scratch and look at exactly those issues. And Sarah Filiozzi from PBOT's leading
that. I know
that
wouldn't be exciting to everybody, but,
but we're excited about it.
So. Yes. Well, but also, well, it people don't get excited about that, but then when they see the reality of what it means, like when we first tried out bike corrals, people, which is in Portland, if you're not from here, we have places where we took out a parking spot or two and put in 20 bike racks in that space, and it's made a huge improvement for bike parking. Right. So while people may not understand that it took a lot of work to get that parking space out and these bike racks in, that this is why projects and planning like this are so important. Right. And speaking of which, we are getting towards the end of our hour here. So if people want to know more about this or get involved with the process, where do they go?
Sure. So a couple places. As I said, the comp plan, comprehensive plan, is in front of City Council right now. There are two hearings this month on the final amendments. So if you want to get involved in that, City Council meeting 6 p.m. on April 14th, another one in the afternoon of April 20th. The transportation system plan commission I'm on actually just finished our public hearings. We're going to be doing our votes, and then it will go to City Council in a few months, so there'll be involvement opportunities around that. And also the Central City Plan, where I think some of the toughest decisions about which streets get bikeways are going to have to be made, will be, again, a few months from now, will be coming to our commission, and we'll have public hearings on that. So people should watch out for that. And if you just Google City of Portland Planning, you'll get to the Bureau of Planning Sustainability site, which will have links to all these things.
And you are pretty much Portland's number one advocate for sustainability and transportation. So if somebody wanted to maybe not be involved at the at the depth that you are, but just be involved with the process, where is a great place to start?
You know, get involved in your neighborhood association. Most neighborhood associations have a land use and transportation committee. You can get involved in what's happening in your neighborhood.
So then it's really personal.
Yeah. And you can, there are lots of things you can follow in Portland. Obviously, Bike Portland is the go-to place for cycling information. Bike Loud has been doing really great work if you want to be more of an advocate. Lots of good avenues out there.
Great. Well, Chris Smith, thank you so much for hosting our podcast continually and for being on the show today. It's been a great having you. And next, I'd like to welcome Sarah Newsom. It's a little special surprise guest for you all out there. She's the communications manager for the Bicycle Transportation Alliance. And I'd like to welcome her to tell us a bit about the Bicycle Commute Challenge, which officially kicks off May 1st. Traditionally, it's been held in September, but the Bicycle Transportation Alliance is shaking things up this year, and she's here to tell us a bit about all the new bells and whistles, as well as how you can take the challenge. Welcome, Sarah Newsom.
Hi, how's it going?
Great. So traditionally, it's been in September, and traditionally, I think only kind of organizations or businesses could kind of participate. So what's different?
Yeah, so this year we moved the challenge to May to sort of coincide with National Bike Month and to try to get people biking now, and that way you're going into the nicer weather season and then you can like continue biking all summer long. So to try to really shift some habits there. The other main thing that's new is we're changing the name. We changed the name to the Bike More Challenge. So traditionally it was the Bike Commute Challenge, and you join your workplace team and you try commuting to work by bike and you log those trips. This year you can still log all of your commute trips, but we've opened it all up to any sort of bike trip. So anytime you are biking out to the movies with friends or to the grocery store or even like your recreational rides, if you like to go on rides on the weekend or whenever.
Or if you're a stay-at-home parent and you are riding your kids to school and doing a bunch of riding that way, that still
exactly.
counts, even though you're not quote-unquote commuting. More of an everyday cycling kind of thing going on.
Yes, yeah. We just want to get anyone to try biking, whether it's to replace a different kind of car trip or a commute or a rec ride or anything. Now it's open up. You can log any of those trips, and that counts. It's still a workplace-based challenge. You would still try to join with your workplace, but if you don't have a workplace, if you're retired or a stay-at-home parent or whatever, you can participate as an individual.
So it's not really also like, I'm going out for a 60-mile ride this weekend. Does that count?
That totally counts.
Oh, does it?
It counts.
Okay, yes, so it's not exactly. really like I'm going 60 miles to somewhere. I'm just going out and riding my bike and coming back. That also counts.
Yep, you can count that.
Is it?
And now we're... Go ahead.
Oh, I actually registered my job, my company yesterday, and I saw that it's basically just 10 minutes or more. You can register? Is that what I read correctly?
Yeah, that's sort of the messaging behind it. That's just a way for people to kind of understand that that's about a 2-mile ride. But when you tell someone that's new to biking to go out and ride 2 miles, they might have a different perception of what that means. Like a lot of people think that's a long way to ride, but you're like, oh, it only takes 10 minutes to ride a couple miles. And so if you just say like, oh, go ride 10 minutes and log that, like it's way more, I don't know, it's easy to digest than go ride a couple miles.
Well, and I think Chris Smith was just on talking about the transportation plan that we're all coming up with. And it seems like, you know, walking a mile seems really far to people. But if you say, okay, well, walk for 15 minutes and that's mm-hmm. 3/4 of a mile. And I like that 10 minutes is kind of just a little bit outside that mile where you could walk.
Right.
A 10 minute ride is getting you just that little bit farther.
Right. Yeah. And it's really easy to do. And it's, especially if you're talking about like, oh, if you just bike to the grocery store, that only, you know, the grocery store is like only a couple miles from your house and it'll only take you 10 minutes. And it starts to be a lot easier for people to consider biking as an option.
And then I saw too, you guys have a new way of logging miles with your new system as well.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot new with this new website. We've partnered with Love to Ride. It's an amazing platform for logging these types of trips. And it's really fun and social. There are a ton of new features and everything is on a point system now. And it actually, you get a lot more points for when you're encouraging new riders to join. So if you encourage someone to join and they join the challenge, and it'll prompt you and ask you, you know, who encouraged you to ride this trip or who encouraged you to join this challenge. And then you get to type in their name and it actually like will recognize that person's name if they're already, you know, joined in the challenge. And then they get new points for joining as a new rider, and then you get new points. You get a lot of points, actually, for encouraging them to join.
So, bonus points.
So it's a really fun way to, like, try to just get more people. And that way it puts a little bit less weight on, like, the miles, the people that are riding those 100-mile rides on the weekend. Obviously, they'll still get points for those. But it is about getting new people to try biking. So it puts a little bit more weight on that.
Well, if people want to register or find out more or see how it works, where do they need to go?
BikeMoreChallenge.com. That's the website. You can join today. Registration is now open. The official challenge starts May 1st. There's all kinds of fun features to check out on the website. So I strongly encourage everyone to go to BikeMoreChallenge.com, join the challenge, check everything out. Start logging your trips now. The new website is integrated with all kinds of apps. You can integrate your Strava, your MapMyRide, your Moves app, and that will automatically upload all of your trip logging information into your profile. So a lot less work for you if you have any of those apps. And then, and there's also a native app if you want to download the Bike More Challenge app. So yeah, check it out, register, and get ready to bike more in May.
Sweet.
Thank you
Thank
so
you
much.
Thank you so much, Sarah.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the KBOO Bike Show, broadcast from Portland, Oregon, on the first Wednesday of every month. Podcasts are on iTunes, and all past episodes are generously archived at thebikeshow.portlandtransport.com. The Bike Show is produced by Alon Rubb, Tori Bortman, and myself, Meg Keyes. We'd like to thank our in-studio engineer, Patsy, our website host, Chris Smith, and as well as today's guest, and then our editor, Josh Hetrick. We'll be back next month with more news and Film by Bike, the North American's greatest bicycle film festival. Until then, make it a great day and keep riding your bike.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, and the time is now just 1 hour before the top of the hour. It's noon. At KBOO, we have a dynamic community of 500 volunteers who keep the station running. Depending on your interests and availability, there are a great variety of things to do. KBOO offers training in radio production, voice and microphone skills, audio editing, and field recording for volunteers who have attended volunteer orientation and commit to volunteering to fill station needs. Do you want to get involved? Contact Ani, the volunteer coordinator. Her email address is volunteer@kboo.org, or you can call her at 503-231-8032, extension 213. And now stay tuned for the noon news, followed by Jazz Lives with Nick Griffro.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to sponsor Wamba, the Analog Cafe, Thursday, April 14th at 10 p.m. Wamba is a Portland-based band that mixes traditional West African rhythms from Ghana with jazz, funk, and afrobeat styles. Thursday, April 14th, there will be a special two-set performance. The evening starts at 10 p.m. in the Analog Cafe, 720 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm at the right side of the homepage under Community Events. KBOO.